cities, like forest fires, grow out from a central ignition point consuming land. Unlike burned forest land, however, the inner city does not spring forth a new life when burned out. Instead, we are left with a no-man's land of decaying buildings, garbage-strewn vacant lots, and our young huddled in protective circles under broken street lamps. Enter the gardeners, who, with or without permission, plant new life in the no-man's land of the inner city. These green gorillas lead us to ask today, who owns the city's no-man's land?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 608th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Lima who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hi, guys.
Producer Carol Stafford.
Hello.
Parmley Taff.
Hello.
Kelsey Olson.
Good morning, Dad.
Also, hey, look who we have here. It's Dad himself, Captain Hungry Olson. Say hello, Dad.
Hello.
And Delphine. Say hello, Delphine. Go ahead and pull it down.
Hi.
All right, there we go. Folks, we've got the whole crew here today. You know, it doesn't take much imagination to know that something thoroughly depressing has happened to our nation's inner cities. A drive through almost any city reveals a no-man's land of decaying buildings, garbage-strewn vacant lots, and the young huddled in protective circles under broken street lamps. Enter the guerrilla gardeners who, with or without permission, plant new life in all that hopelessness. Their gardening leads us to ask, why do inner cities become stagnant and fall into despair? What can gardens do for neglected cityscapes? And what right, if any, does one person have to plant a garden on the property of another? Here to help us dig for an answer, we have a couple of great guests today. Steve Frillman, who is the executive director of Green Gorillas in New York City. Steve, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi.
Great to have you aboard. Green Gorillas of New York City. Can you give us a little history?
Sure. We were created by a group of people in the early 70s, and this was before we even had the first Earth Day and before people recycled and before there really was even much of an environmental movement at all, who on the Lower East Side of Manhattan got together and began to reclaim vacant lots and began to do what they called the guerrilla gardening, throwing seed bombs over the fences of vacant lots and just planting
seed bombs.
Flowers. Yeah, they used to. What they would do is take soil and clay and seeds and add a little water and roll them up into balls and let them dry. And then when there were vacant lots that they didn't have access to, they would throw them over the fences.
You mean somebody has their vacant lot fenced off, and so they take these seed bombs and drive by and throw them over the top of the fence and down into
right.
the... Interesting.
And that's how the early Green Gorillas got started. And then what they did is they actually moved on to getting groups of people together to actually take on these vacant lots and to plant community gardens where people would get together and say, what would we like to do here? What would we like to plant? And then eventually, after a few years, they actually got formal permission from the city. And now, 35 years later, we have over 600 community gardens in neighborhoods all over New York City.
Wow.
And all tended by groups of volunteers, some growing food, some just maintaining and cultivating a little park for their neighbors,
mm-hmm.
Some creating little botanic gardens, a lot of events, a lot of education. And
you've really grown up.
Yeah, in some ways, what we have in New York City is we're sort of a glimpse at what the way you described guerrilla gardening in your opening. We sort of represent what guerrilla gardening can become after several decades of all kinds of activities,
mm-hmm.
and giving people the opportunity to really take pieces of urban land and kind of take their own vision as gardeners and really take that vision and open up that fence and go and walk in and create a garden. And so that's one of the reasons why we have 600 community gardens of all shapes and sizes and colors.
600 community. Well, we always ask our guests, Steve, who paves the way? Who paves the way for the green, the gorillas of Gorilla Gardeners of New York City?
As you can imagine, in New York City, there's never a simple answer to any question that involves money. We are sort of blessed in New York City with the fact that we have many different groups and nonprofits that serve community gardens. So a really simple, as simple as I can, there's a program in the city called Green Thumb, and that's the program where community garden groups get permission to garden on the land, and Green Thumb provides support. And that program actually sits in the Parks Department of the city, but it's actually funded by federal community development block grant money. We're Green Gorillas is we're a nonprofit, and we get the vast majority of our funding from foundations.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also are a membership organization, so there's about 400 people who send us checks every year. We also do a little benefit party every year. So we're a pretty classic kind of small, scrappy nonprofit. And then there are another 10 different nonprofits of all shapes and sizes that work with community gardens.
Okay, so you really do have your roots going deep into the community now, as we're after 30-some years of guerrilla gardening then.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have relationships with garden groups. In terms of Green Gorillas, our relationship with garden groups is really about what we can do for them. We provide mm-hmm. them with some plants. We do a big focus of our work is really community organizing, and that's really taking a look at community garden groups and forming relationships with them and really helping them sustain themselves as grassroots groups, because really to sustain a garden, you really need to have a group of people where they can sustain themselves as a grassroots group.
So otherwise, the weeds grow. Hey, representing the other side, the new side of the gorilla gardening movement, we have Agent Stamen from the Los Angeles Gorilla Gardening. Agent Stamen, welcome aboard.
Well, it's great to be here. It's also Rolly Polly is also on the line, Agent Rolly Polly.
And so you represent the other side, the upstart of the gorilla gardening. Do you throw seed bombs?
We do. We started doing some seed bomb workshops with some schools, and we're starting to do green seed bombs for the upcoming season.
Okay, so whereas the New York City Green Gorillas are very organized and supported by the community, the L.A. Gorilla Gardening Groups, they travel under pseudonyms and aliases. We have Mr. Stamen, we have Ms. Pistol, we have Rolly Polly, we have Poison Ivy, we have Philodendron, we have Petunia, we have Pussy Willow. Who are you?
Oh, well, I mean, the pseudonyms are more of a fun aspect to it that we just think is sort of a fun, just a fun thing to do and get people interested and excited about doing gorilla gardening. It adds to the clandestine nature of gorilla gardening.
It is clandestine. Why is it clandestine? I mean, it would seem like doing what the folks in New York City are doing would be greatly honored.
Yeah, no, and it is. When the community sees what's going on, they get really excited about it. And we've had city council members who've come out and said that they support us specifically. So it's more of the city turning a blind eye to it a little bit, because it takes so much work and paperwork and liability to get a garden to happen in a city. So we're kind of going around it in that way. But it's funny listening to the Green Gorillas. I mean, they're a big inspiration for what we were doing and what we are doing. And it's great to see what's happened to them in 35 years. And a lot of what they're saying is kind of where we want our organization to go in the future, too.
Okay. Who pays your way? Who takes care of you? Who pays your way for the L.A. Green Gorillas?
Well, the way it works right now is that everybody brings the plant that they have, either that they have grown or from their own garden. Sometimes we get plants donated from nurseries or from individuals. And it's very much funded by the people who are doing it. So, and you can also donate on our website, lagorillagardening.org.
Good, and we'll get that out later, too. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. When we come back, we're going to look at the history of guerrilla gardening with our great guest today. We have Steve Frillman, who is the executive director of Green Guerrillas of New York City. We have Mr. Stamen, who is the agent spokesperson for the Los Angeles Guerrilla Gardening Group. And we have you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1880, phone numbers today. When we get back, we're going to look back in history to the diggers or the levelers who started all of this off and how it continues today throughout the nation, this conflict between those who plant seeds of hope and those who own property, and see if we can't find some way of bringing you together. Right back. Please do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Way back when, in jolly old England, I think it was about 1649, about 20 poor men assembled at St. George's Hill, Surrey, and began to cultivate the common land. These diggers, as they were known, held that the English Civil Wars had been fought against the king and the great landowners, and now the land should be made available for the very poor to cultivate. Well, the movement went over very big. They wrote songs about it. They collected all kinds of new people, and it became a great movement. And, of course, it attracted the attention of those people who happened to hold title to that land, and they objected. And of course, there was a conflict, and the diggers, or the levelers, as they called themselves, lost. So the fight for these community gardens, or these guerrilla gardens, goes on. And we even note that as recently as a few months ago, there was a great struggle over community garden in Los Angeles. I think it was Santa Monica, but I'm not certain. Mr. Stamen, was that true? Santa Monica?
In 2006, there was a huge garden, actually downtown L.A., that was being fought over, that had a lot of support from a lot of different people to try and keep the land and keep the garden. I don't know if that's the one you're referring to.
But it seems like it just goes on and on and on. And so there's a real long history of green guerrillas. And let's see. Steve's line is not on. Okay. I just got direct order from producer Carol Stafford to fix Steve's line. And there, we got it fixed.
There's also a garden right now. There's actually, in Fresno, there's a garden that has been gardening. I think the garden's been going on for 30 years, and it's a bunch of immigrants from I think Southeast China, and they are about to lose their garden to the city, who again sort of took turned a blind eye to them gardening, and allowed them to garden there, and now they're using the land for a police substation, and so that's a fight that's happening right now that. You know, people can learn about and try and contact the Fresno City Council to.
Let me ask both of you a philosophical question, if I might. Why is there so much no man's land in the inner city? Steve Frillman, let's go with you first. New York City, I drive through the Bronx, and there's a lot of vacant land there. Why?
One of the things that happened in a place like New York City is something that played itself out in other cities, which was there was a period of time especially in the 70s and early 80s, where there was just a tremendous amount of disinvestment. Landlords literally walked away from their buildings, and the city would take the buildings over and tear them down. And then there was you saw neighborhoods, the South Bronx is a perfect example, that lost a great deal of population, where folks fled those areas, and they lost a great deal of population. So that creates a certain amount of energy where that land doesn't get redeveloped.
But what is the energy? Why doesn't the land? It's incredibly valuable land, isn't it?
It really depends. One of the problems that we have, we're actually lucky in New York City. In some ways in New York City, when you look at how big the city is, there's in some ways we have less pockets where there's this tremendous, where there's huge amounts of vacant land and there's just no energy because of immigration. New York City actually maintains a great deal of its population. There's actually a bigger problem in smaller cities where there wasn't that population replacement, but it really was, the suburbs, the development in the suburbs around New York City meant that there was a great deal of time where there wasn't that infill development. There weren't developments happening. There weren't communities being designed. There wasn't anything going on in these areas because a lot of the energy was midtown, downtown, and suburbs.
Is there something in the air? Something that prevents redevelopment?
It's a combination of a number of different things.
Mm-hmm.
It's also the way housing gets funded. Federal funding for housing is very different than it was in the past. So a lot of developers that even want to build moderate income housing or low income housing generally need to have these very complicated formulas where they need commercial development and market rate development. So it's a really combination of a lot of different things. One of the things that we've always helped gardeners in New York City talk about is one of the things about the real value of the community gardens that people have created in New York City is it's about creating whole communities.
Well, isn't that what we're talking about, bringing life?
Yes. One of the things that we talk about and that community gardeners talk about is you can't just talk about when you talk about, urban neighborhoods. Typically, all anybody talks about, whether it's policymakers or politicians, is they talk about large-scale development. They talk about buildings. They talk about, creating jobs. And what you need to be able to talk about is you need to be able to say, every neighborhood in our city needs economic development. Every neighborhood needs housing, but you also need safe, usable, open space.
Mm-hmm.
You also need places where children can connect to the earth. You need places where people can grow their own food. And if you can have those discussions, and if you're talking about that in every neighborhood, regardless of income level, or regardless of who lives there or where they're from or whether they've been living there for 50 years or whether they're new immigrants, if you can really get to the point where you're having those kinds of discussions, then you have an opportunity to create livable, healthy neighborhoods. And what we found in New York City is that community gardens and community gardeners are at the center of that activity that you really need.
Let me ask both of you to comment on, I have a good friend in Watts. Her name is Anna Marie Carter. She goes by the Seed Lady of Watts. And she says, and I quote, "The environment in Watts is toxic. We are told not to drink the water. The air is polluted and there is not much rain. Multi-generational gangs, multiple drug usage, carnal value systems resulting from being institutionalized by welfare system for generations, and low morality all add up to no self-esteem, depression, overcrowding, crime, and escapism through unprotected sex and drugs. Where there seems like there is no hope, there is no reason to be happy or to act decently or to dream." And thus, the Seed Lady of Watts brings life back into this terrifying environment with plants. Mr. Stamen?
Yes.
Do you see that?
That's one of the things that's great about guerrilla gardening specifically is that it creates such a good community around people and an activity to do that gets you to know your community and know the people around you. And I mean that's what's really the most exciting thing for me for guerrilla gardening is gardening in a community and learning who my neighbors are. So and we've done specific projects with schools in South Central to try and combat that.
Try and combat the attitude, the sense of hopelessness?
Yeah, well, and also to create community and create, just a space where people want to be.
What do the school kids do when they're introduced to Mr. Stamen and Miss Pistol and Roly Poly and Pussy Willow?
Well, the first thing I think is sort of an excitement that it's this fun thing,
mm-hmm.
I think that's the first sort of that's the first impression that I get, and then once they start learning about what it is, it's like, man, this is really cool and sounds like something that I want to try and do on my own and figure out how to.
So they actually understand that there's a revolutionary movement going on here. You know, when we come back, I'd like to ask both of you, one, for specific examples of what happens when you plant gardens in inner city environments. What happens to the environment? What happens to people? And then beyond that, who has the right to plant a garden in the soil of another person's private property? I want to come to grips with that whole notion, because that is the essence of guerrilla gardening. We garden with or without permission. Folks, this is The Food Chain, Michael Olson. We have a couple of very good guys to talk guerrilla gardening. Steve Frillman from New York, Mr. Stamen from L.A., and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, folks, it doesn't take much imagination to see that something thoroughly depressing has happened to our nation's inner cities, and really doesn't take too much imagination to know what to do about it. We have here a couple of gentlemen who figured out what to do about it, and one of them is Steve Frillman, who's the executive director of Green Guerrillas of New York City, a 30-plus-year-old organization that is now focusing on serving the needs of over 600 community gardens in New York City. We also have Mr. Stamen, who is the agent spokesperson for the Los Angeles guerrilla gardening movement. The LA gardeners are still very much in the guerrilla gardening mode, in which they plant plants with or without permission of the landowners, and they grow things, and they seek to become, I guess, what they have achieved in New York City. Is that right, Mr. Stamen?
Yeah, well, we want to be a resource for other gardeners to be able to come and figure out how they can do their own garden, mm-hmm. and how they can create community through this guerrilla gardening.
Well, let me ask both of you, what happens when you plant a garden in a depressed area like our friend Anna Marie Carter talked about in Watts, where the environment is so toxic that all people can do is just barely live?
Well, one of the gardens that was done was in the heart of Hollywood, and that garden there was a
yeah. But isn't Hollywood filled with gardens? You know, with rich people and mansions and all of that.
Well, the funny thing about Hollywood is actually Hollywood's very very depressed in terms of in certain areas. There are definitely areas that are extremely nice, but those areas are not. What people mostly think of Hollywood, they think of, you know, the glitz and glamour and movie stars and things like that. And really, Hollywood it has a lot of trash and homeless and just blight in general.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the gardens that we had had trees that were overhanging and over the sidewalk, and there was specifically a strip of land where there was just tons of trash. And with that area specifically, we went around and we trimmed the trees and started this garden and picked up all the trash around the area. And now it's an area where people can walk by and talk. And now from that garden, people will come by and water the garden and weed the garden on their own as a community. And so there's been an incredible range of people who come and help. I mean, we've had people who are in their 70s and 80s come by with, you know, one can of water and doing what they can to, you know, middle schoolers who walk by the garden and have a cup in their hand of water and help to do it. And so there's this incredible interaction with the community as a whole, and it's not specific to one group or one kind of person. It's the whole community who gets around it, and there aren't many things that create that kind of community.
You know, in looking through your website, I noticed that when you do an action, you don't sneak about in the middle of the night. You do it during in the daytime, and you use bright, brilliant, colored clothing.
Well, we actually do it at nighttime and during the day. It depends on the specific garden. And
depends on who owns what, right?
Well, yeah, we want to try and avoid conflict as much as possible. Mm-hmm. So, you know, depending on where it is and things like that. That depends on how we garden that particular spot.
So what you did when you planted that, when you took over that, what was the property? Who owned it?
Well, that's one of the things that we try and do. We actually try not to to garden on private land because if you garden on private land, then somebody owns it, so someone can take it away.
Mm-hmm.
So we try and look for first what's coined as orphan land.
Mm-hmm.
So it's land that nobody really knows who might own it. So places where it might be owned by the city, or it might be under the jurisdiction of Caltrans, and nobody really knows who's supposed to take care of the land. So because of that, then if you have, you know, at least two people who think, oh, the other person must be gardening it, then
divide and conquer, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So it allows you to keep a garden for a longer period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And get community support behind it.
Hmm. So you really, not only do you change an environment, but you change a community when you do this. Steve Frillman, what happens in New York City? Can you give us an example of what happens when a community garden is planted in a blighted area?
Oh, sure. I could give you 600 hundreds of examples. But well, just recently, actually, a few years ago, the city actually gave Green Gorilla site control over a very large space for us in New York. Is 19,000 square feet in Brooklyn. And this is a lot that had been vacant for over 20 years. And folks in the community just never really understood what was going on with the lot, because it's on a very busy street, Fulton Street in Brooklyn. And it was actually designated open space as part of a large development and then never actually developed into open space. And when you know, we just took it on, and we agreed that we would.
Did you find the property?
The city actually came to us because
they didn't know what to do.
It's been designated open space, and there are folks in the city that are very supportive of the notion of community gardening, and they actually came to us and said, if you're willing to rally the community and really sort of drum up interest, we'll give you site control for a few years and see what you can do. And we knocked on doors and put up flyers and put up a sign on the fence with a phone number.
They call it site control? Site control? Which is kind of
site
like
control. They basically said, we will allow you to...
It's kind of like a lease then, right?
Sort of, basically, yeah. Essentially, it's just an agreement that we can organize a garden here.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have to worry about the sanitation department or the police department coming and...
The lawyers coming in and check things out. Yeah.
And, you know, we're just wrapping up our second growing season, and the garden group there is 45 people strong. They were harvested, cultivated, planted, 50 raised beds that produced almost 2 tons of fruits and vegetables. They gave hundreds of pounds of fruits and vegetables to a soup kitchen across the street. There's a group of school kids from the local school that garden there. They also planted a really beautiful ornamental garden. The garden is open for people in the neighborhood. They've created a master design. And what's amazing is, and Stamen was actually talking about this a little bit, and that's really the real secret to any of these activities, whether it's what Stamen and his friends are doing in L.A. or what we're doing in New York, is the fact that people come together and they have an opportunity to just roll up their sleeves and look each other in the eyes and spend the day together with the sun on their back, doing work, pitching into their community. There are now 45 people that didn't even really know each other before who are part of this grassroots group and who are working on this land together.
Who organized them? I mean, who decided who was going to be the field general and who's going to be the corporal and who's going to be the soldiers?
Well, it's interesting. This group of folks, they don't have, there's no chief in this group. I mean, they really, all we did was put the call out, and all we did was say,
there's
this big piece of land, you've been walking by it or driving by it or looking at it outside your window for years. Now what you can do, if you come and if you're willing to just pitch in, we can turn it into a community garden and urban farm and educational center. And they're a pretty well-organized
group.
Gave
them something to do.
Huh?
Gave them something to do. Folks, this is the Food Chain. We're talking guerrilla gardening with Steve Frillman, Executive Director of Green Guerrillas of New York City, Mr. Stamen, spokesperson, L.A. Guerrilla Gardening, and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, right back. Well, who indeed owns all of that neglected no man's land in the inner cities of our nation? Tough question. Is it the people who own it have deed to it and neglect it and leave it sitting there empty? Or is it the people who throw seed bombs on it and cause life to grow? Tough question, you know. If you own a piece of property, you're building something and you're waiting for times to change or to develop, and all of a sudden a community garden springs up on that land and you have to go there and say, I'm sorry, that's my land, you can't grow here. But then that's their land too. They took it over, and then there's a lot of interesting elements in that. Who owns that land? Let's talk to the people who are taking over some land, mostly with permission, I assume. Steve Frillman, New York City, do you always work just with people who give you permission?
Well, for the most part, the thing about New York City is that what's interesting is when we first started doing the guerrilla gardening thing, the early Green Guerrillas were really like Stamen and his friends. They just kind of did it, and they scoped out the land. They didn't actually try to get into any conflicts, especially with private owners, but there was so much city-owned land. And they did not have a vision in those early days of where their movement was going to go, and they didn't really worry about it. So they were
having fun.
If they could take over a piece of land and garden there, they weren't worried about what was going to happen 6 months later or a year later. If they could get some food in the ground, if they could plant some flowers, if they could beautify the space, they didn't sweat the details. And what happened in New York City is that the timing was just perfect. That was right when the city had tremendous inventory of vacant land, much more than it could ever do anything with. It was the beginning of the environmental movement.
And incidentally, I was speaking in Milwaukee earlier this year at an urban agriculture conference, and that is exactly where many of the Rust Belt cities are right now, too.
Right. So interestingly, we were in a position in New York City where that initial guerrilla gardening just took off, and within 5, 10, 15 years, it was actually quite easy to get permission from the city to create a community garden. I mean, really, where the issue of ownership is much more difficult is in cities where there isn't that vision and there isn't a way for community residents to just get permission to create a community garden. And then that's where the kind of stuff that the guerrilla gardening that Stamen and his friends in L.A. are doing, there's a guy named Richard Reynolds in London who just wrote a book on guerrilla gardening. He and his friends will just sort of take over a piece of land and do it. That's where that ownership comes into play. We think it's wonderful that there are still people who are willing to do what our founders did. And we're all just going to have to see sort of where it goes. But ownership will become an issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Stamen.
Yes.
And you're throwing seed bombs on these properties that belong to somebody else?
Well, I mean, the seed bombs, is definitely something in particular. I mean, it's wildflowers to beautify land specifically. So,
I love the notion, by the way. I mean, this is wonderful, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of throwing beer bottles in somebody's property, you're throwing seed bombs.
Yeah, and so, I mean, this is land that seed bombs are generally used for land that you can't get to otherwise. So this is something that might be fenced off or whatever. And it's for us, at least for me personally, when you know, seed bombs are used, it either it works or it doesn't. And if it works, that's great. And if it doesn't, that's okay too. Mm-hmm. And
certain timing that you have to figure in, take into consideration. You know, something you probably want to do in the early spring when the rains are coming, right?
Right, and that's part of it. And the other part of it is also is that, you know, if so, something grows there, and somebody bulldozes it over or puts up a building. You know, that's their land to use.
Sure.
In particular with the seed bombs, because that's just to make it look nicer than what it does right now.
What about the land in places like Watts or South Central L.A., where, you know, times have just become so tough that people won't build on their land anymore, and the land just sits there?
Well, there's a specific group, I think they call themselves the South Central Resistance, who just started. It's a community guerrilla gardening group. That started at a high school that we're helping out right now, who's starting to try and do their own guerrilla gardens in South Central. And they started doing some garden and throughout the summer, and some of the problems that they had were that some of the plants were stolen from their garden.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, on one particular occasion, the students were stopped by the police and weren't allowed to do any gardening. So that's some of the issues that come up with guerrilla gardening.
Sure. So if you're a landlord, I just think, you know, my brother and I are trying to develop a lot back home in Montana, and you know, we're kind of stuck because of the situation with the banking in the United States right now, so we're kind of on hold. But I got to thinking, what would happen if somebody came in and put a garden in this lot that we're developing? And then, you know, that the conflict that would arise therein. And I, in fact, I've received a number of emails when I discussed doing this radio show from people who said, you know, there's a lot down the street that nobody knows who owns. Well, of course, you could find out if you really wanted to. But here's a vacant lot that's been vacant, 20 years you were talking about earlier, Steve, and nobody developed it. What about going on to those properties and taking them over and kind of forcing somebody's hand to either take care of that land or sell it and let it move on or something? But it just seems to me like there's so many excuses for despair in the inner city, and planting plants is one way to overcome them. Folks, we have a few minutes left with Steve Frillman and Mr. Stamen. If you would like to talk with them or ask them a question or make a comment, who owns all that no man's land in the inner city? Pick up your phone and join us. We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Your phones, pick them up and join us right back. Well, if you travel around the country a little bit, you know that the inner cities of our nation are some dire straits, most of them, many of them, especially in the heartland of the country, the Rust Belt, as it is. But even here on the coasts, the inner city has a real tough time getting by. I think of Anna Marie Carter in her visions of Watts and what life is like there. So what do we do about it? Well, one thing we do about it is plant gardens, because gardens not only change the environment, but they change people in that environment. And here we have two people who are doing that and have been doing it for a long time. Steve Frillman, Executive Director of Green Guerrillas of New York City. Mr. Stamen, spokesperson for the Los Angeles Guerrilla Gardening Group. Steve and Mr. Stamen, what advice would you give people like in the Rust Belt who would like to reinvigorate their inner cities with life, with gardens, bring life back to those despairing areas? Where would you start? Let's go with you, Mr. Frillman.
Well, I would say that there's really no catch-all solution. I mean, the thing that folks should probably realize is I think there's going to be tremendous opportunity with the economy and the state that it's in. If there's vacant land in your community, there's a very good chance that if there are development plans for it, that those development plans are going to be delayed probably for years. There is going to be very little money available to finance developments and to build. So if you have a vision for either just doing guerrilla gardening and beautifying it, or if you have a vision for organizing your neighbors to create a community garden, that you can just get started and do it. And you don't need to have this grand, sophisticated vision for what you're going to do. You don't need to be talking to landscape architects and raising a lot of money. You can really just,
get some shovels and dig in.
Get some shovels, dig in, get seeds and plants from wherever you can, and just get started and do it.
Mr. Stamen, does it help to smile a lot when you're doing these things?
Of course, yeah. I mean, that's what it is. You know, it's a fun thing to do with your you could be with your family or with your friends or with your community. The thing, I think, to start with the garden is to make sure that it's small and near you so that you can take care of it and that your community can take care of it and that you can watch it. And it's really just taking the first step, because that's really the hardest part. It's just taking, just getting out and doing a small piece of land. And it can be as small as one plant, or taking a planter that has been abandoned, a tree planter that's gone, or whatever. So thinking small is to take that first step is the most important thing.
Wow. And how do we get in touch with both of you? Steve Frillman, Executive Director of Green Guerrillas of New York City, where do we get in touch with? Where do we look into your world?
Folks can visit our website, which is nycgreen.org or greengorillas.org.
Mr. Stamen, Los Angeles?
You can contact us at lagorillagardening.org, so gorillas with two R's. And you can also email me at mr.stamen@lagorillagardening.org.
Well, thank both of you for joining in. And, hey, thank all of you for tuning in today. I'm curious to know what you think. Who owns that land, that no man's land in the inner city? Visit metrofarm.com. Leave your comments on the forum page. And see you all next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on The Food Chain.
Listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.